The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to the 2017 Internal Medicine Board Review Course, sponsored by the American College of Osteopathic Internists. The course was held March 22nd through 26th, 2017, at the JW Marriott Las Vegas Resort and Spa. The course featured nationally known speakers presenting a wide variety of topics of interest to the internist preparing for certification or recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Drug cause side effects and disorders is presented by Dr. Richard Darrow.
We move now to one of the more boring lectures. I was privileged to have one of the more exciting lectures where I can jump from topic to topic in terms of skin disease. Now I jump to drugs, which, as I say, is extremely boring. So if you need to take a break, this would be an extra break. This would be the time to do it. What I've done, as you know, drugs cause everything, and everything is caused by all the drugs. So what I've done is I put the drugs that they're liable to ask you on the board in red, pretty much. So I think when you go through this, don't waste your time. Just look basically at what's in red. So here we go. First of all, just as a background, drug effects, of course, are due to drug interactions. And a lot of those interactions have to do with cytochrome P450, which you're all familiar with, as well as the transporter P-glycoprotein, which is an efflux pump, which pumps the drug out of your body. Just think of it that way. It actually pumps it across the membrane to the external part of the cell, or external to the cell. But just know that whatever affects cytochrome P450, let's say it enhances cytochrome P450, generally it also enhances transporter P-glycoprotein. So in terms of the drug then, it will either get rid of the drug from what I just said, or if it inhibits cytochrome P450 and inhibits transporter P-glycoprotein, it will increase the effects of the drugs. So again, if it's an enzyme inducer, that's going to eat up the drug, so to speak. The same thing will happen in terms of the P-glycoprotein. So again, to make it simple, they both work in the same direction. The other pharmacological effects have to do with direct interactions of the drugs affecting each other in terms of protein binding, excretion, metabolism, etc. So with that as a background, we'll go ahead and look at the drugs that they might ask you. In terms of hypoglycemia, of course, you know that aspirin can produce hypoglycemia. You should be aware that sulfonylureas, of course, will obviously produce hypoglycemia, but that'll be worse if there's associated renal or liver disease that has to do with the metabolism of the drug, obviously. So this is obvious. Tramadol's been listed. I don't think they would ask that in terms of the hypoglycemia, but they might. Hyperglycemia, as you know, the antipsychotics were added to that list. So especially the minor antipsychotics, they do cause hyperglycemia. The heart drugs, the drugs used for HIV, of course, can produce hyperglycemia. And more recently, in the last few years, statins have been added to the list. And of course, that was very depressing to a lot of us, who, myself included, who love statins. I think they should be in the drinking water. But now they're telling me it shouldn't be in the drinking water because it creates diabetes. So you have to weigh the good against the bad. Hyperuricemia, of course, this was also very disheartening to me when they said the soft drinks are bad, the fructose and soft drinks are bad. And of course, what it really has to do, what it is particularly related to is hyperuricemia. The soft drinks can produce hyperuricemia. As far as hypercalcemia, I think we can blow by that. Thyroid function test, amiodarone is always the drug they're going to give you because amiodarone can do all of it. Hypothyroidism, hyperthyroidism, thyroiditis. It doesn't matter what you mention. It can be produced by amiodarone because of its high iodine content. Recently, the phosphate enemas, especially Osmoprep, were taken off the market because of renal failure related to the hyperphosphatemia. So that's certainly fair to question. Hyperkalemia, you already know the ACE inhibitors and the beta blockers. Don't forget heparin. Heparin inhibits aldosterone production. So if you have somebody on an ACE inhibitor and you put them on heparin, you could induce hyperkalemia. Of course, NSAIDs can give you hyperkalemia. You know that. It's type 4 RTA. Spironolactone, any combination. Of course, the one they're liable to ask you, they'll put a patient on an ACE inhibitor and maybe add spironolactone. Then they'll come along and add Bactrim or Sceptra to the program. Well, you've just created hyperkalemia. I can almost guarantee this question. This is one you better star, because this, I see this all the time, adding Bactrim or Sceptra or trimethoprim, because trimethoprim has the same effect as amiloride or the aldosterone antagonist, spironolactone, etc. Star that one. Hypokalemia, of course, I put mineral corticoids, but that's obvious. Just forget this one. Hypomagnesemia, though, I think you should pick up on this one. PPIs can produce hypomagnesemia. Diuretics, obviously, you already know that that can produce hypomagnesemia right along with a hypokalemia. But PPIs have been incriminated with hypomagnesemia. Why is that important? Well, if you're talking about hypomagnesemia, you can get into parathyroid dysfunction and so forth. Metabolic acidosis, I don't think there's much here that's new, except for the SGLT drugs, the sodium glucose co-transporter drugs, the Flozins. You can get what's called a euglycemic diabetic ketoacidosis. Very rare, but of course rare is what they like to ask on the board. I don't know if it'll be on there yet, since the boards are usually reviewed like 1.5 to 2 years ago, and this has just come out in the past couple years. But it could be fair game. I think I would star it, SGLT2. If I was going to ask, this is one I would ask. Euglycemic diabetic ketoacidosis. Euglycemic, of course, because they're used in diabetics with heart failure, because obviously they get rid of glucose, and glucose has a good osmotic effect to diurese the patient. I think we can skip metabolic alkalosis. Hyperlipidemia, of course, the HIV therapies, the heart therapies are incriminated in hyperlipidemia, just like they are in diabetes. So you have those listed. Tricyclics can give you a metabolic syndrome, so I don't know that they'd ask that, but I've seen it quite a bit in the literature. Hyponatremia is obvious. The old standard is SIADH due to carbamazepine or Tegretol. I think you already know NSAIDs can potentiate SIADH at the kidney, so you can get hyponatremia from NSAIDs. Hypernatremia, you know, it's a treatment, dimethylcycline. It's a treatment that you see used, and of course, it can induce hypernatremia. False positive ANAs, I think there are more drugs added to the list now with the biologics, but there's two of the originals that were associated with false positive ANAs. So should they give you one of those drugs and somebody with an ANA, you pick the drug. Caffeine for insomnia. I hate to see that one. I support the caffeine since it certainly is now being used for every disease, especially liver disease. Fatigue, interferon, as you already know. And then tyrosine kinase inhibitors, since they come in to the usage that they're having, that they're enjoying right now, be aware that they can produce a fatigue just like interferon. Headaches, quinolones, maybe they might ask. I doubt it, really. ACE inhibitors, you know that. Dizziness, of course, Namenda, pregabalin, Lyrica. Not anything there I think would be asked. Gingival hyperplasia, they used to ask. Of course, Dilantin was the big one, phenantoin. You can see it with calcium channel blockers. Taste disturbance, Flagyl, of course, is the classic. Metronidazole for taste disturbance. The pseudolymphoma syndrome, again, Dilantin was the classic. I don't think there's anything new on those. Fever, of course, with the Abacavir, but this is the one you wouldn't give to an Oriental patient without doing the HLA tags, but because the fever usually ends up developing into either DRESS syndrome or Stephen-Johnson, TEN. Hyperpyrexia, you need to know all three. And you know those. The antipsychotics for the neuroleptic malignant syndrome that Scott talked about, the SSRIs with the serotonin syndrome, and then the succinylcholine with malignant hyperthermia. Be aware of all three of those in terms of high fever. Weight loss, of course, it's a good side effect, the exenatide, the tides. Let's see, not anything for, DIGE is a classic for gynecomastia, you know that. The heart therapy, of course, can also produce gynecomastia. Spironolactone is one of the old classics. I put the classics in red. I doubt that they're asked anymore, but they used to be asked. So I put them on there anyways, just in case. The nausea and vomiting, of course, the cholinesterase inhibitors for any of your Alzheimer's patients. And the diabetic meds, it, of course, to your advantage, the metformin, the exenatide. Diarrhea, of course, antibiotics to C. diff. You don't have to think much about that one. PPIs, you'll see PPIs a lot from here on these slides because they're involved in quite a bit. As you know, it changes the flora, and you actually increase the chances of C. diff. You also increase the chances of Campylobacter with the PPIs. So probably any of those infectious diarrheas. Let's see. I think you remember Paxil for the DNA fragmentation, the impotence, erections, and whatever. Constipation, nothing new there. Tegretol on the erythema multiforme, again, that's the Asian connection. So funny. Let's see, porphyria cutanea tarda that I talked about, remember it affects that uroporphyrinogen decarboxylase enzyme in the liver. Well, NSAIDs can do that, especially naproxen can give you a porphyria cutanea tarda. They probably won't ask it. I would consider it for a question, but they probably won't. Voriconazole does it too. But again, they probably won't really ask that. I put it on there. I don't know why, but because I see it occasionally. Amiodarone for photodermatitis and hyperpigmentation. Certainly, if amiodarone is a choice, pick it. Tetracycline, you already know. You can get that hyperpigmentation, that phototoxicity thing. Skin necrosis is obvious. TEN, again, especially the seizure drugs, and again, it's that Asian connection. Sounds like a movie, the Asian connection. HART, let's see, Lamictal, okay. DRESS syndrome, I mentioned that. Again, DRESS syndrome, you're going to have a lot of eosinophilia. It's going to be a perifollicular rash. I didn't get time to talk about it much. And it's going to be associated with liver interstitial nephritis in the kidney and interstitial pneumonia in the lungs. A lot of things with DRESS syndrome. I can almost guarantee DRESS syndrome on the board. But they're going to have tons of eosinophilia, so it's going to make it obvious. And it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks after the drug started. Not tomorrow, not over a month, but 2 or 3 weeks is when it's going to start. The hand-foot syndrome due to the kinase inhibitors, again, they're being used more, so you may see this. The gliptins can produce, you're going to see gliptins quite a bit in here. They don't talk much about it, but they seem to have a lot of skin effects. The gliptins can produce a pemphigoid-type picture. Allergic contact dermatitis, I don't know. There's a lot, you know, in consulting in the throwaways about using these skin products, and you can get, it's obvious, you can get an allergic contact dermatitis. Hyperpigmentation, again, amiodarone. Of course, you have the old tetracycline and the busulfan. Fixed drug eruption, classic. I don't know if they'd ask it anymore. It's usually phenolphthalein, but with the heavy use of NSAIDs, it could be the NSAID. Remember, the rash is always in the same spot every time the patient gets it. For some reason, it's in the same spot. I'll skip those. Erythema nodosum, of course. You have a host of things that cause that, like sarcoid with Lofgren syndrome. But remember, first thing you look for is strep infection, because that's the most common cause of E. nodosum. It's still strep infection, the last I checked the literature. But then the second thing you're going to look for is birth control pills. for erythema nodosum. Angioedema, ACE inhibitors, but look at gliptin. A gliptin got on board here for angioedema. As I said, you're going to start seeing the gliptins showing up here in the skin. Well, they're enzyme inhibitors. It kind of makes sense to me. Anaphylaxis, I don't know. Omalizumab, I guess if they ask anything. I didn't redden it out, but that's the contraindication to the omalizumab. You've had your asthma lectures, so you know that. Alopecia, nothing new there. Again, don't forget heavy metals, though. They're not drugs, but... NSAIDs can give you a lichen planus-like eruption. We didn't get to lichen planus, but if you do, I didn't get to discuss it in the skin lecture. But if you have a patient with lichen planus, especially oriental, then think Hep C. There's a relationship. Oriental, again, it's the Asian connection with Hep C and lichen planus. Depression, sustiva is kind of the classic one now. Suicide. I always think this one's funny because you try to get somebody to stop smoking, you put them on Chantix and they kill themselves. But it's pretty, every one of these is controversial. One week you'll see, yes, they do. The only one that's consistently positive would be the antidepressants. So I think if there's any answer at all, or any question on this at all in terms of suicide from a drug, pick the antidepressant. Because remember, they're so depressed they can't kill themselves, but you start the antidepressant, they get a little less depressed. Now they have the energy to kill themselves. So the SSRIs are still the right answer. All these other ones are still, it's back and forth in the literature. They're always arguing about whether they increase suicide or not. But they are there. The antileptic drugs, now they're saying they don't produce suicides or make somebody commit suicide. I don't know. It's back and forth. Stroke, of course, cocaine, you'd pick up on that. Warfarin, of course. PPIs. PPIs, again, yes, the PPIs do reduce nitrous oxide. Of course, what does that mean? That means endothelial dysfunction. So PPIs can give you endothelial dysfunction. Delirium, nothing there. Let's see. Extrapyramidal, you already know. Reglan, seizures, probably nothing. Quinolones can produce seizures. Pseudotumor cerebri, this one might be fair game. Tetracycline and vitamin A can produce pseudotumor cerebri. Aseptic meningitis, don't forget the patients that present with aseptic meningitis. If they're on an anti-epileptic drug, that's probably the cause. Before you start chasing enteroviruses and all that stuff. Peripheral neuropathy, you know, everything causes peripheral neuropathy. The ones they like to pick on now, flagellus, of course, a classic. But metformin, as you know, metformin, you've probably read this a lot in the literature, can... give you B12 deficiency. So the patient may start having numbness because of that posterior column involvement. So be aware of that. Metformin, a lot of people on metformin, so you're going to see more of the peripheral neuropathy, the B12 deficiency. Optic neuritis is just the classic hydroxychloroquine. Cataracts, of course, steroids, statins, for cataracts as well. Retinal detachment, maybe the quinolone. That's still questionable. It's not questionable in terms of tendinitis, but it is questionable in terms. But this retinal area is kind of like a tendinitis. It's the attachment, has to do with the attachment. So maybe yes for retinal detachment. Glaucoma, of course, Topamax, you got to be aware of Topamax for glaucoma. Thyroiditis, again, amiodarone. Angina exacerbation, I don't think they'll ask that. Heart block, anticholinesterase, yeah, you know that one. Atrial fib, bisphosphonates, a lot of people on bisphosphonates. Apparently, they do have an increased incidence of atrial fib. The problem is everybody that's getting old like me is having an increased incidence of atrial fib, and I'm not on a bisphosphonate, but a lot of people are. drugs prolonging the QT. I think that's anything that you don't already know. So I'll skip that one. Hypertension, the calcium neuron inhibitors, of course, you do have to be aware of that. You need to monitor their blood pressures when they go on those. I think you already know that if you have renal transplant patients in your practice. The tyrosine kinase inhibitors also can give you hypertension. Edema, note the NSAIDs, of course, you already know this. You have a patient in heart failure, you're not going to put them on an NSAID. And now they're saying not only does it worsen the edema, but it creates atrial fibrillation as well. And look at DDP4. Here comes a gliptin again. This is the one place in cardiology where you got to be careful giving them the gliptins, because they are incriminated. We're producing edema, especially in congestive heart failure patients. So be careful with the gliptin in heart failure patients. This is pretty much definite now. There was an argument in the literature initially, but now they're saying pretty much contraindicated in congestive heart failure. Cardiomyopathy, the HER2, trastuzumab, and you already know the adriamycin and all that stuff. Pulmonary infiltrates, nothing really new. ARDS, of course, cocaine, watch out there. Pulmonary vasculitis, no worry. Thromboembolism, erythropoietin. If somebody just got started on an erythropoietin drug a month or two ago, now presenting with chest pain, watch out for pulmonary embolization. Heparin, of course, because of HIT, H-I-T. NSAIDs, be careful with NSAIDs as usual. Oral contraceptives, you know. Levamisole. Remember that levamisole, that necrosis of the skin due to the cocaine? Well, at the same time, that levamisole that's used to cut that cocaine can produce neutropenia. Oddly enough, in that syndrome, they do produce antibodies against the neutrophil. In fact, they can produce P-ANCA. So if you get a question on that, watch out for it. If the patient comes in the ER with necrotic ear tips, you got to look for that cocaine and levamisole. Thrombocytopenia, nothing new here. Oh, quinine, obviously. Quinine is the big one. In fact, there was a New England Journal CPC 6 months ago. It was called, the name of it was After the Party. And there was a little quinine in the drink that this girl had taken at the party. So on the way home, she developed severe thrombocytopenia, started bleeding. Drug side effects, megaloblastic anemia. Well, telaprevir's gone now. They took it off the market. Metformin, of course, because of its B12 connection, can give you megaloblastic anemia. So that's fair game. Hemolytic anemia, always consider dapsone, because it creates both hemolytic anemia and G6PD-associated hemolytic anemia. So if dapsone's in the answer for hemolytic anemia, pick it. And methemoglobinemia, look at that. It's all three of them. Hemolytic anemia, G6PD, and methemoglobinemia, all of them. Iron deficiency, of course, bisphosphonates, because it is used a lot for osteoporosis. Also increased chance of esophageal cancer. Pancreatitis, the list goes on. I won't say anything. Well, there is the gliptin again, DDP4. But the tide got on with it also, so I don't know. Peptic ulcer, bisphosphonate, of course, again. Small intestinal ulcers from NSAIDs. NSAIDs can give you ulcers all the way through, actually, right on into the colon, because it can increase collagenous colitis. Diarrhea, let's see, bleeding, dabigatran. Cholestatic jaundice, nothing new. Gallstones, the classic is octreotide. You already know that one. Hepatitis, acute hepatitis. It's still amoxicillin clavulinate. The most common cause of drug-induced hepatitis still, even though those other ones, all of those can do it. Kidneys, interstitial nephritis, of course, methicillin, the classic with the eosinophils in the urine, you already know that. PPIs get on board here, especially recently, a lot in the literature about PPIs and interstitial nephritis. So another place where you got to watch out for PPIs. Renal tubular necrosis, of course, again, it's the phosphate bowel preps that are incriminated here. You know the radioiodinated contrast. Kidney stones, triamterene is the classic one for the kidney stones. You have some other drugs there, some antibiotics can do it. Priapism, trazodone, again, that's a classic one. I know these are boring to death. Here's a star, tendonitis and ruptured tendon, the quinolones. Star it. If they don't ask that, I'll be shocked. I've been shocked before, by the way, so I'm shocked that you're still here, in fact. Let's see, vitamin, okay, tendonitis. Okay, again, tendonitis, the fluoroquinolones, and I've questioned the retinal detachment because it is a possibility. Osteoporosis, thiazolinediones, they're still tagged with that. But look at, again, PPIs, of course, because of the calcium connection. And look at, I put down there for you, PPIs also implicated in C. diff, aspiration pneumonia, of course, hypomagnesemia, osteoporosis, and B12. I kind of lumped a lot of the PPI stuff down there because they could ask any of those. Statins for myopathy, that's an obvious one. And remember, statins with enzyme inhibitors or P-glycoprotein inhibitors like macrolide, you're going to get more muscle necrosis. It's not a good combination to use the inhibitors. I'll get to that just before we end, a comment about the inhibitors and the inducers. Collagen vascular, nothing new. Polyarthritis, look at Glipton got on board here too. I see Gliptons all over the place. But you don't read about it. So it's, I don't mean to be knocking the Gliptons, but they keep showing up here. Cancer, erythropoietin, again, erythropoietin. Just the same as for DVT, erythropoietin, also incriminated with cancer. Calcium channel blockers are questioned. Bladder cancer still with thiazolinediones reconfirmed, but of course not a high incidence. Metabolic syndrome, tricyclics. Increased mortality with tigecycline. Of course, acetaminophen, that's obvious for the liver reasons. And let's see. Okay, here's the bottom line. This is what you have to get out of here knowing. Anticonvulsants, any of the anticonvulsants, any of the atypical antibiotics that are listed here in St. John's wort are enzyme inducers. They're also P-glycoprotein inducers. What does that mean? They're going to eat up the primary drug. So let's say somebody's on warfarin, and you give them an anticoagulant or one of these atypical antibiotics like cloxacillin, griziofulvin, nafcillin, rifampin. The one to mark there is rifampin. It's notorious as an enzyme inducer. It's going to stimulate cytochrome P450 and P-glycoprotein and get rid of the primary drug. So memorize that top list. Anticonvulsants, atypical antibiotics, and St. John's wort. Bosentan's also included here, but I took it out because most people aren't on. That's use that for pulmonary hypertension. Most of you aren't using it. Bosentan could be included. But anticonvulsants, these atypical antibiotics and St. John's wort. If somebody's on a medication and you add any one of those, it's going to eat up that medication. So if they're on warfarin, the patient's going to have a blood clot if you put them on these drugs. And vice versa. The next group, amiodarone, azole, antifungals. You don't have to memorize this group, because they're not in the first group. The only one you got to memorize is the first group. Anything in the second group are enzyme or P-glycoprotein inhibitors. It's just that some are better inhibitors than others, and those are the ones I've listed. But you don't necessarily need to memorize them. But they are amiodarone, the azole antifungals, cyclosporine, grapefruit juice. In fact, some people give grapefruit juice with the statin in order to potentiate the statin. So grapefruit juice, and then the macrolides. I think the ones, if you do want to memorize amiodarone, the macrolides, and grapefruit juice. Anyways, you don't have to memorize them. Memorize the first list. The first list are the enzyme inducers and P-glycoprotein inducers. The second group are the inhibitors. What does that mean, that second group? Let's say you've got somebody again on warfarin. You give them a lot of grapefruit juice. It's going to potentiate the warfarin. They're going to bleed. Okay? That's how you reason this out. So it's really simple in terms of P-glycoprotein and cytochrome P450. You have the inducers, you have the inhibitors. The inducers are going to eat up the primary drug. The inhibitors are going to increase the primary drug. So however they ask the question, you can figure it out. Just memorize that first line of inducers, because they're going to eat up the drug, and you've got it. You've got that question answered. So anticonvulsants, atypical antibiotics, those listed, especially rifampin and St. John's wort, are going to eat up the primary drug. Okay? And that's the bottom line. So just leave with that. You can look at the questions that I've put for you in the back. Thank you.